Today's podcast isn't about coffee. It's about ways to doctor up bone broth, 10 habits of successful vegetable eaters, 30-second office workouts, and a whole bunch more. I have a friend. His name is Dr. Frank Lipman. Very good medical practitioner in New York City. I met this cat the last time I was there speaking. He's a wealth of knowledge. He just wrote a book, so I figured I should dish out him to you. In this episode of the Ben Greenfield Fitness Show.
I became pre-diabetic many years ago because I was eating tons of fruits and vegetables and tons of grains. Thought that was a healthy way to eat. You know, I believed in this low-fat nonsense. You know, music's part of the human condition and it's as ancient and primal as we are. And, you know, in South Africa, for instance, growing up, you know, in African cultures, there was different music for funerals and music for weddings. So music is always an integral part of most cultures.
He's an expert in human performance and nutrition. Voted America's top personal trainer and one of the globe's most influential people in health and fitness. His show provides you with everything you need to optimize physical and mental performance. He is Ben Greenfield.
Power, speed, mobility, balance. Whatever it is for you, that's the natural movement. Get out there. When you look at all the studies done, studies that have shown the greatest efficacy.
All the information you need in one place, right here, right now, on the Ben Greenfield Fitness Podcast.
Hey folks, it's Ben Greenfield here, and it was a few months ago that I was in New York City. I was speaking at my friend and chef David Boulay's fantastic restaurant over there. If you've never eaten at his places in New York City, you're missing out on an important part of life. Anyways, though, at one point, I went on a 2-mile run through the city with my wife to go visit the offices of this person that David told me I had to go and visit. This guy is an author, and I'd come across his books before. I'd never met him, never been to his clinic, and his name is Dr. Frank Lipman. Frank Lipman, L-I-P-M-A-N. He has this wellness center in New York City called 1111 Wellness Center, which is over in kind of the Flatiron section of New York City, for those of you who are familiar with the area. And he sat down with my wife and I and just intrigued us with all of his amazing ideas when it comes to health and wellness and some of the unique things that he does, especially regarding food and movement and even like sound healing and self-massage and some of the things that we'll delve into on the show today. So his new book is wonderful. He gave me a copy. I read it. A bunch of pages are folded over, so I had to get him on the show. The book is called How to Be Well, The 6 Keys to a Happy and Healthy Life. How to Be Well. And the show notes for everything that Dr. Lipman and I talk about can be found over at bengreenfieldfitness.com/Lipman. That's bengreenfieldfitness.com/LIPMAN. Dr. Lipman, can I call you Frank, or would you prefer for me to just continue to call you Dr. Lipman?
Frank is preferable. Good.
Far less awkward. All right. Yeah. Cool. Well, you know, like I mentioned, our mutual friend, Chef David Boulay, is a big fan of you. When did you guys meet?
Well, the feelings are mutual. I'm a big fan of his, too. I met him. I mean, I obviously always knew about David's restaurants and had eaten there. But a couple of years ago, he invited me to talk at one of his. He has these gigs where he asks. You've spoken there a few times too.
Yes, so his restaurants where he serves you like a 5-star, you know, 8-course meal, and then folks like you or I talk to people while they're eating.
Exactly. So that's where I met him, and we fell in love with each other. So, you know, philosophically, we're on the same page. He's an intriguing type of guy. So we've just stayed friendly.
Yeah, and he actually, in his kitchen, he has this amazing turmeric oil, this anti-inflammatory turmeric oil that he uses. And you actually, I think you were responsible for creating that recipe, weren't you?
No. I'm always interested in finding ways to help people get healthy. So over the years, you know, I've been a physician for almost 40 years, and it was very early on that I realized that Western medicine wasn't really helping a lot of the common problems of the day. And that was even in the 80s, you know, people who are tired and have headaches and back pain and can't poop and can't sleep. And, you know, Western medicine is wonderful for crisis care. And I probably don't have to go into your audience, obviously knows this stuff. So for all these years, I've been searching for different ways to help my patients. And over the years, as you refine it and refine it, I keep on looking for ways to get healthy ingredients into them, to make eating fun, to get ways of getting spices, ingredients that are good for someone's health into people. And David has a way of creating different oils with herbs that I find quite intriguing and actually very helpful. So I didn't create, he creates the recipe.
This was his recipe. You're just a big fan of it. You talk about it exactly, in your book.
Yeah. So in my book, I have a lot of these experts. He's my expert on spices. I have someone, an expert on bone broth. So I use these people and I try and incorporate their wisdom and distill it and put it out there. So
So tell me about this turmeric oil recipe. Walk me through this if people want to make this.
I was blown away by how he uses oils in his restaurant. He'll take whatever oil it is. He uses often a mixture of olive oil and avocado oil and sometimes grapeseed oil, which is the one he uses with turmeric. And then he mixes in some herbs and creates this sort of a spicy oil, and then he dribbles it over food. So for the turmeric oil, and I have the recipe in the book, he uses 1 cup of ground of turmeric to 30 tablespoons of oil, which his recipe is a blend of equal parts of avocado oil, grapeseed oil, and extra virgin olive oil. I've made it a little bit easier as well. I've given people an option. And I, personally, when I use it, when I use it at home, I just simply blend 1 part of ground turmeric with 1 part of avocado oil and 1 part of extra virgin olive oil. So I make it easier. But either way, you can do it. And you just fill a glass bottle or a jar with the oil and the turmeric and or the oils and the turmeric. And then you cover it and let it sit and you keep it away from light. And 2 weeks later, you have this wonderful spice-infused oil. And it's fantastic for dribbling over cauliflower florets before you roast them. Or we drizzle it over some wild salmon before we cook it or any other veggies you want to roast. Sometimes I put it into soup. It's just a wonderful way of getting these good fats into you and these spices. So he's just a master of infusing oils with these herbs. And he often uses ginger and garlic or vanilla.
It's a very cool way to make the turmeric lipids or, you know, fat soluble. Turmeric is fat soluble already, but the body absorbs it better when you blend it with lipids.
Yep, and then you can just ground a bit of black pepper on, so it's even, you know, absorbed even better. But yes, because turmeric needs fat to be absorbed properly. So yeah, he's one of these crazy, you know, food as art. I mean, he's basically I think he's a artistic genius using food as his medium.
Yes. The thing I recently learned about turmeric is it's a pretty potent antioxidant at the gut level, meaning it can help with leaky gut and inflamed guts, but it actually doesn't really do a great job getting past the gut until you actually do something like blend it with lipids. You know, that's where it would, for example, act on, let's say, the blood-brain barrier or more systemically. So this is a great little trick to get a full body anti-inflammatory, you know, joint inflammation or anti-inflammation and muscle anti-inflammation effect from the turmeric. You've got the full recipe in there, but it's very similar. You know, what I do is I take turmeric and I add it to Pau d'Arco tea, because the Pau d'Arco tea has a lot of what are called beta-lapoxenes in them, which are really fantastic for mitochondrial health. And I blend that with a little bit of coconut oil or sunflower lecithin or krill oil, and I kind of use that as a base for smoothies. Or sometimes I just drink a cup of it, and it's a fantastic way to get my turmeric in a very similar way as this David Boulay anti-inflammatory turmeric oil that's in your book. So I love all the little recipes that you have in here, and I want to take a dive into a few more of them. But first, I wanted to ask you about the overarching theme of the book, and that would be this idea of what you call a mandala. Can you explain what a mandala is and the relevance to these six keys?
Sure. So for many years when I started out as a traditional physician, and when I started learning Chinese medicine in the mid-80s, it took me many years I was trying to understand what the Chinese were talking about from a Western perspective. So what is qi? What are meridians? You know, are the meridians now from a Western perspective, they're these fascial planes. What is qi? Is our mitochondria qi? So for many, many years, I was struggling to understand what the Chinese were talking about in their language and what it meant from a Western physiological, perspective, anatomical, pathological, etc. So from where I was brought up as a Western doctor. So for this book, you know, after years and years of doing it, I said to myself, why don't I take all the knowledge I've learned from a Western perspective and put it into this concept of a mandala? Because a mandala is used as a tool for establishing a sacred practice, especially in Eastern traditions. You know, they deploy it in practices of meditation as a focal point of contemplation to help you gain awareness of yourself from the physical aspects to the spiritual aspects. So for this book, I took a mandala and I created what I call a good medicine mandala. It's sort of a new map for a new era of medicine around this organizing structure of a mandala. And, this mandala, I've been influenced by it, as I said, it's used in so many wisdom traditions around the world. And it's always, almost always a circle which represents wholeness.
Yes.
What I did is I put you, the patient, the reader, in the middle, because this organizing, so I have this organizing principle of a mandala and this collection of these simple actions and practices that can improve you and maintain your wellness. But ultimately, it's about learning about yourself. So you are at the center and you're surrounded by these six rings. And the six rings are what I call my six pillars of health: how to eat, how to sleep, how to move, how to protect yourself from all the chemicals and toxins around you, how to unwind or relax, and how to connect with oneself, with your community, and with the earth at large. So it was you in the middle and these six surrounding circles, which are our six pillars. So the mandala is this organizing structure.
Yeah. I'm a little bit familiar with the mandala, I guess, based on my conversations I've had with Paul Check. Paul paints mandalas, and he and I actually made a painting together, and I have it hanging here next to me in my office. It's a painting of a tree in a circular mandala form, and we did it together as part of a meditation. And so he paints mandala for meditation. His whole home is full of mandalas.
Well, that's interesting. So is my office and part of my home. But that's interesting because Paul Check was one of those people that opened my eyes to the whole musculoskeletal aspect of health, because, in Western medicine, you don't learn about the fascia and the soft tissue. In Chinese medicine, you don't learn about that. I mean, I got some of that in my yoga sort of understanding, but Paul Check was actually really instrumental in helping me understand the importance of functional movement. And so that's interesting that you say that he's got these mandalas, because he was one of my influences in this sort of overarching idea of health that I have, which sort of brings in all these other aspects.
You guys would get along quite well, I'm sure. I don't know how often he gets to New York City, but I'll
send him over. He was,
yeah, Maybe I'll connect you guys after the show.
I remember that book of his. What was it called? I mean, that brown cover book. It was fantastic.
How to Eat, Move, and Be Healthy. Yeah, How to Eat, Move, and Be Healthy. Yeah, I'll link to that one in the show notes along with your book. I want to get into some of the specifics in your book that I found absolutely fascinating. Bone broth. You're a fan of bone broth, and you have all these cool ways to doctor up bone broth. Specifically, you've got three kind of like tools that you consider to be essential tools that you keep around for doctoring up bone broth, and then some really cool flavor combinations. A lot of people just get into bone broth and they, you know, suck down their cup of bone broth and, you know, plug their nose and throw it back, or, you know, taste the bone broth, and frankly, just bone broth in a cup doesn't really turn me on. It tastes like, you know, liquid cardboard. What do you do with bone broth? What are your tools for doctoring up bone broth and some of your favorite flavors?
So once again, this is an area like I used David for the spices. I went to my favorite bone broth maker, Marco Canora, who started a place called Brodo Broths in New York City. And he, you know, to me, bone broth was chicken soup. What did I know about bone broth? I mean, yeah, I knew it was good for you, but I never realized how tasty it could be until he started developing all these delicious flavors. So he became my expert and turned me on to so many different ways of making bone broth. But he talks about the three important tools you need to doctor your bone broth. They're very simple. First one is a mortar and a pestle, because you need to pound those herbs and those roots into a paste. And then you just, you know, place the paste at the bottom of your cup and you pour your hot broth over. So you get this magical flavor. It's not just that standard bone broth. So you get flavor from the paste of whatever you're putting in.
Okay, so you basically take the mortar and pestle and any herbs that you want. I know you've got some recipes you'll get into here in a second. And all you're doing is just using the mortar and pestle, grinding up all the herbs, and then putting those into a cup and pouring the hot bone broth over top of it.
Exactly. But here's like the fun. You're going to enjoy this part. The other tool that he says is essential is a battery-operated milk frother. And that's because he's usually, and as do I, adding fats into the broth, like grass-fed ghee or butter or MCT oil, coconut oil, even bone marrow. And he often also blends spices into the fat before he puts it into the bone broth. And then the frother just sort of spices it up or mixes it all up. So you mix in this fat and these spices into, so it's more fatty or it's fuller, it has more good fats in, has these spices in, and it just mixes it in. So that's a great tool to have. I mean, in other words, if you want to take your bone broth to the next level, you need a mortar and a pestle, you need this milk frother, and then you need some type of grate. I mean, he recommends a microplane because it's something to grate fresh ginger or turmeric or garlic, or just get creative with spices. I mean, he uses radish and horseradish. I mean, so he gave me a couple of different flavors. He recommended that I've put in the book. So, once again, it's like going to these really good chefs or the Paul Cechs of movement, going to these people and saying, what the hell do you do to make it easy for your clients, to make it tasty for your clients? Because I'm just a mere doctor. What do I know about this stuff? So I went to people who already know their stuff, because I can know the theory of, yes, this is good for you, but if we can make it tasty and simple for people, then people are going to gravitate towards it.
Okay, so you've got some recipes and flavor combos in here that I find just fascinating, because a lot of people don't think about this stuff when it comes to bone broth. Like, you know, for example, you've got adding coconut milk and ginger to bone broth.
Or favorite.
Adding Bragg liquid aminos and then whisking that with an egg yolk into bone broth. You've got about 20 different recipes in the book. Which one would you say would be the top bone broth flavor combo, or the top couple that you really like that you think people should tap into right away?
Well, a really easy one is just coconut milk and ginger, but that needs to, you know, you need to use chicken for that. That doesn't work as well with beef, but just a garlic puree and some thyme, my favorite one, because it's got so many different spices, is coconut milk with a pinch of ground turmeric and some ground ginger and smashed garlic and pepper and salt. I mean, that is absolutely delicious. But once again, when you're using coconut milk, it's better to use chicken broth than beef broth. But for beef, just using ginger and some fresh or some ground turmeric also works well, and also, once again, has some anti-inflammatory effect, and the turmeric and the fats in the bone broth. So all these things work well together.
I love it. Okay.
Another really good one, if you like that Middle Eastern flavor, is that Middle Eastern spice, that Ras El Hanout spice. He uses that a lot with some butter and some cilantro and some lime juice. So you get that, you know, I love Middle Eastern flavors and food. So you get that Middle Eastern sort of flavor.
Yeah, I have a bunch of boxes. I mean, my wife makes bone broth sometimes, but I have these boxes of organic kettle and fire bone broth. It's a perfect size. And one of the things that I do with them, this is not something you have in your book, but maybe you'd like to know about this, is I take it out when I get up in the morning, and by the time I have breakfast a few hours later, I take it out of the freezer. So it's like of a slushy consistency. And then I dump that into a blender, and I blend it up with like some cinnamon and some stevia and a little bit of like a cacao powder, sometimes a little bit of protein powder and some the blending. I blend for a couple of minutes, and then I top that with like cacao nibs and coconut flakes, and it's almost like a Wendy's Frosty that I have in the morning for breakfast. So I almost have like dessert for breakfast, and I use frozen bone broth as the base.
Yeah, no, that's fantastic. I love that.
Yeah. Now, obviously, there's a lot of other things we could talk about when it comes to nutrition. And something else I found fascinating in the book was the 10 habits of successful vegetable eaters. The 10 habits of successful vegetable eaters. I hadn't seen a lot of this stuff written about before. Can you delve into the habits of successful vegetable eaters?
Yeah. So, you know, I'm all about, you know, whatever your diet is, whether you're vegan or you paleo or Mediterranean, whatever it is, I think veggies, especially the green leafies and the cruciferous vegetables, for most people, obviously not everyone, should always take up, you know, I say the most of your plate should be, or your main course or your main plate should be the vegetable plate, and your side plate should be your fat and your protein. So I'm a big believer in like eating a lot of veggies. And how do you get people, or how do you make it easy for people to get those veggies into them? So these are the tips that I find really helpful. Like, for instance, just make a layer of green mixed vegetables the foundation of every plate. And then on top of that, you know, an easy go-to meal for my wife is my chef, basically. But she does this foundation of veggies and puts some eggs on top. So something like that. Just always make your veggies your foundation and then put something on top. I think when you have something that's ready to eat, it's always easier. So when you go shopping, just, you know, spend a little bit of time afterwards and cut and prep your veggies, so you don't have to spend time when you want to eat, that they're basically ready in a bag for you. I think that's another easy way. I think once a week, maybe roasting and prepping veggies for the week. I think in New York, I don't know where you're out in the middle of nowhere, you probably have more time, but everyone's in such a rush here. So these were tips to try and make it easy for people. That is, you know, because I'm always getting that complaint, well, I just don't have time to cook, or I don't say, but if you get things prepared, it's easier. You're making soups from vegetables, and then adding broth, for instance, is something easy you can do. Replacing pasta with spirals, you know, like zoodles or whatever, you know, you can roast a spaghetti squash and scoop out the strands, even kelp noodles you can have. So there's so many things you can do. And like, here's one that we use all the time now. Everyone's starting to use it, which is wonderful, is using cauliflower, you know, you making cauliflower rice or cauliflower mash. So you get that satisfaction for that desire for starchy food, but it doesn't, you know, affect your blood sugar. So cauliflower is one of my favorite, has become one of my favorite vegetables, because I basically use it as rice and potato now. And who needs rice or potatoes?
Yeah, one of the things that you talked about, actually, a couple of things you talked about, I personally do. My wife makes, you know, amazing dinners and sometimes, you know, amazing lunches as well. And I take anything she makes, from her quiches to her fish to even steak, and I always serve it over a big bed of either wild plants or mixed vegetables or some form of vegetable. You know, you say the bed is the first thing. And I just eat, you know, all, if we have pizza, for example, I eat the pizza. I put the pizza on top of the salad and I eat the salad through the pizza with a fork and knife. Exactly is the way that you talk about in the book. Another few things that you mentioned was roasting. That's another thing I'm a big fan of, is it's so easy. You chop up a bunch of carrots, cauliflower. I even roasted cucumber before, and you just drench it in olive oil and sea salt, and then you put it in the oven and walk away.
Yeah, and this is where David's spice and oil tips really help, because you just take that turmeric oil and you like drizzle your vegetables and roast them. It's fantastic. Yeah.
And you prevent a lot of the oxidation. You know, you see a lot of lipid oxidation, especially with meats, but even with some vegetables. So yeah, using the turmeric as the oil works really well for that. So yeah, I like a lot of the tips that you have here. You even have certain folks that you like to follow in terms of vegan or vegetable or plant-based oriented feeds. Now, are you plant-based yourself, or do you eat meat?
Yeah, no, I eat meat. I love meat. I'm basically paleo. I became pre-diabetic many years ago because I was eating tons of fruits and vegetables and tons of grains. Thought that was a healthy way to eat. You know, I believed in this low-fat nonsense. Until, you know, 1 year, I took my bloods. I didn't even realize I wasn't feeling that great. I mean, I was a little bit puffy, but I never realized it was anything per se, because I thought I was eating, I was basically eating a pescatarian type of diet, tons of fruit. And I was pre-diabetic, so I changed my diet around completely. And now I hardly eat any grains. I'm eat a very low carb type diet. When I do eat meat, it's grass fed and grass finished or organic chicken. So it's, the source of my animal protein is important, but absolutely I eat animal protein. And yeah, I have some fruits now and then. I'm fine now, but I'm not obsessive about it. But for the most part, I eat low carb, paleo, whatever you want to call it.
I was pleased to see that you have a whole bunch of different tips on becoming a cacao connoisseur. Tell me about how it is that you came about becoming such a fan of cacao. What it is you like about it, and then some of your favorite brands that would be considered Dr. Lipman approved when it comes to chocolate.
Yeah, I mean, cacao came. I've always loved chocolate. Little did I realize in the old days that chocolate was basically sugar. So chocolate sort of, when I started getting off sugar, chocolate became my go-to dessert. And then with time, it just got darker and darker and darker. And as your taste buds change, you start appreciating different chocolate and different cacao. And, you know, also realizing it's not so bad for you either. It's like the sugar that's a problem, not the cacao. So I don't know if I'm a connoisseur. And to me, I think, you know, try find any brand, you know, I'm always recommending, even 70% has got a lot of sugar. So we're always recommending at least 80-85% dark chocolate. I just think people associate chocolate as comfort food. I mean, you know, I do a lot of cleanses. I get people off their sugar. I mean, that's probably one of the first things I do. So having people know that they can have chocolate can be quite comforting for people. And, you know, making people realize that as your taste buds change, you'll start appreciating different chocolates, and it won't have to be just sugar. It'll be more cacao. So, you know, I'm definitely not a connoisseur. We just mentioned some brands that myself and my writer like particularly. So that's where it came from. It's more about, I got into that space because it was a healthier dessert.
Well, it's also a fermented food. A lot of people don't realize. Now, do you know how many probiotics you'd actually get from chocolate, it being a fermented food?
You know, I don't know. I mean, the way I look at all of this stuff, you know, I stopped counting numbers or breaking things down into the small parts years ago because I just had a problem with the whole reductionist part of Western medicine, because I think the way chocolate, the way turmeric, the way all these things work, they work in the context. Like, let's just take, in Chinese medicine, herbal formulas are usually a mixture of different herbs. They don't take the active ingredient and then, you know, you take a lot of it. Usually, the way they describe it, and I think it's true, is, you know, these plants are made by God, or there's a reason for them having these aspects of the plant, because they often mitigate some side effects of the active ingredient, for instance. So I don't look at it that way, to be quite honest. I just see it as possibly good for the microbiome being this ecosystem in your gut. So I don't really see it that way, to be quite honest. The way chocolate comes into my way of thinking is really as sort of a healthier dessert.
The 90 to 100% chocolate, you know, I'll have that as a full meal. Sometimes I'll mix it with some macadamia nuts or some spirulina and chlorella. You know, I'll do that on an airplane, for example. Macadamia nuts, spirulina bits, and then a handful of super dark chocolate, and it's pretty amazing. And yeah, you do get some amount of gut bacteria, and as you delve into in the book, you know, theobromine, antioxidants, a lot of other benefits. You have some brands in there I hadn't heard of, like Matakase, Raka, Wee. What's the cacao one? You talk about drinking elixirs and cacao.
The cacao and the Matakase actually came from my writer, because she's obsessed with this as well. They are these elixirs made with chocolate, and it's cacaochocolates.com. So she knows. I mean, this is a whole Californian thing, I think. I mean, she was from California and really into health. And we were trying to once again give people, make it fun for people. So we put in these brands that are particularly interesting and different. For instance, Way of Chocolate is a very interesting brand. Unfortunately, some of their chocolates a little bit, you know, it isn't potent enough, or it's not 80%, but some of it are. They put herbs and mainly herbs in there, so they'll have a chocolate with some herbs to chill you out. They'll have some all different. It's also flour based. They put it's an interesting brand because they're combining some therapeutic effects of herbs with the chocolate, which I like.
And they make elixirs too. Very interesting. It's called Kakawa, K-A-K-A-W-A. I'll put a link in the show notes. Man, I'm such a sucker for good chocolates. Do you ever go to Sedona, Arizona?
I haven't been for a while.
Yeah, they have a restaurant there called Chocolatry. It's just amazing, and it's all based off of these fine chocolate elixirs and chocolate infused meals. And anybody who travels to that area of the world, I highly recommend that you check that place out.
And here's another tip: when you come to New York, if you go to Marco Canora, the Broder, the bone broth guy, if you go to his restaurant called Hoth on the Lower East Side, instead of a cheese board at the end of the meal, he brings out a chocolate board.
Wait, how are you spelling that?
H-E-A-R-T-H, Hoth. It's a restaurant on the Lower East Side. Marco Canora is the chef. He did the bone broth in my book. So instead of this cheese board, you bring out this chocolate board with it, and you can have a tasting of like 5 to 10. He has a chocolatier who he works with. So he has these special chocolates from all over the world, from 70% to 100%.
Oh, wow.
It's really interesting to have. Yeah.
Well, over there in New York, you also have Who Restaurant, H-U. Not only is that a fantastic restaurant, but they also do a paleo vegan chocolate that's amazing. It's like cashew butter flavored. They have a hazelnut butter. They have one with almond butter and puffed quinoa. They even have a new one. I think it's crunchy banana chocolate. And if anybody wants to buy their way into my heart, a WHO chocolate gift card will do so. You can bribe me easily with chocolate, but I don't know how much you've had their chocolates, Frank. But they're amazing chocolates.
I like their chocolate. It's just unfortunately a lot of it's got too much sugar. It's not dark enough for me, but it is delicious. I agree.
Okay, got it. Okay, so we've got chocolate in the book, and you take a pretty good dive into that. And then I also like some of the workouts that you have. For example, one thing, and this is something I tried yesterday as I was looking over some of the things I wanted to talk to you about in today's podcast. You have a section on there about getting strong, but you specifically have a very simple thing you can do. You know, you say instead of a mid-morning coffee break, and I did this yesterday. It actually works pretty well. Can you go through kind of your mid-morning coffee break workout sequence, kind of this mini workout that you detail in the book?
Sure. So I'm working out, and exercise is definitely not a strength of mine. So I got this wonderful guy who's sort of like a Paul Check. I actually met him through my writer. He's a really, really interesting character who really has a good understanding of the body. So
wait, who your editor does?
No, my writer.
Oh, your writer. Okay.
She hooked me up with this guy, Adam Ticknor, who is a very interesting guy and a little bit like Paul Check. Type of thing. I mean, a really great understanding of the body. He had been a yoga teacher and a Marie. I mean, he's just a fascinating guy. So I met with him and spent time with him, and you know, I realized that this would be a really great guy to help me with the exercise section, because his whole thing is to make it easy for people. And you know, too many people go to the gym and do certain things and they get injured too easily because of the mechanics. So his whole thing is to start out and get strong, get your movement patterns correct, and turn on your trunk muscles, and that in time will prepare your shoulders and hips and the rest of the connective tissue. So he has this great routine that we put in the book, which is four things you can do for 30 seconds. It's basically a 2-minute routine. You hang for 30 seconds. So if you've got a pull-up bar, that's wonderful. If you don't, you know, there's a way to do it on your desk in your office. So you'll hang for 30 seconds, then you'll squat for 30 seconds. And obviously, the mechanics of how you do it is important. Then a bear crawl for 30 seconds, and then a handstand against the wall for 30 seconds. So it's just so easy to do. And, you know, the way he turned me on to do it is, first, you know, it's 2 minutes at a time. So the first thing you do as you get out of your bed, you do it. Then you brush your teeth and then do it again before you sort of get dressed and go to work. Mid-morning, instead of a coffee break, you do this. So, he suggests you do this 4, 5, 6 times a day and just squeeze these 2-minute little things you can do anywhere into your day. And you know, I started doing it, and I'm really not an exercise person. I found it very easy and very, very helpful. And then he helped me with going to the next step, you know, what you can add onto the next step. But he was very clear, as I'm sure Paul Check and you would be, that too many people go to the gym and start doing deadlifts, which I think is a good exercise, but you need to be strong enough to do it first, or using the kettlebell. So we developed a routine for people like me, idiots or old farts like me, who really aren't strong enough to just go to the gym and start doing a lot of the things that I would have liked to have done. So to build it up slowly.
It's very simple, too. You mentioned you could even hang from your desk. I mean, you can hang from underneath your desk, yeah.
So, and like handstand, you know, interesting. I think part of this comes from his yoga training. You know, I've been doing handstands for years in yoga. So we sort of incorporated that, because this each exercise does something completely different to the body, but ultimately it is going to strengthen your trunk muscles and get you stronger, so there's less chance of you injuring yourself going forward.
Yeah, so it's hang for 30 seconds and then squat for 30 seconds, like a squat hold. bear crawl for 30 seconds, handstand against a wall, which I recently learned. One of my friends, Joe DiStefano, who's been on the podcast before, he's the Spartan coach coordinator and organizes this wonderful retreat called Runga every year. Really cool guy. He described to me how holding a handstand position against a wall is actually a form of diaphragmatic training, because your diaphragm is having to breathe against gravity. So it's a really great way to kind of learn how to breathe properly.
And everything's upside down. I think, you know, inverted poses I've always loved in yoga. I've always found them really calming and helpful. And I love the idea, as you say, the diaphragm drops, just when you invert it. So I think your organs sort of shift a little bit. I love inverted poses. So we included that as part of this overall, 30 seconds of hanging, 30 seconds of squatting, 30 seconds of bear crawling, and 30 seconds of inversion. So, handstand sort of is part of just getting strong. And if you can't do that, there are other ways you can do it when you walk away from the wall and walk your legs up the wall. So that's the starting exercise. And then you can go on from there. But for most folks starting out, I think that's a good place.
Awesome. So the other thing you have on there, of course, is a loaded walk as a finisher. So again, it's all kind of detailed in the book. You have all sorts of things in here. So of course, we're bouncing around. Sound healing is something that you get into. Sound healing. Tell me about sound healing. You have some methods to heal with sound. You have four different ways to heal with sound. And a few of them I wasn't familiar with, like this guy named Jonathan Goldman, or also the idea of a sound bath. Can you fill me in on these forms of healing with sound?
Right. So I've been obsessed with sound for many, many years. I think it really helped me growing up. I used music to get in touch with my emotions. But, I mean, whether you know it or not, we're all using music to energize and to motivate or to comfort and soothe. And, music's part of the human condition, and it's as ancient and primal as we are. And, in South Africa, for instance, growing up, in African cultures, there was different music for funerals and music for weddings. So music is always an integral part of most cultures. And the right type of music or sound can slow down your brain activity. It can increase your endorphins. It can regulate your stress hormones. It can help with pain. It can boost your immune system. So to me, sound is one of those ordinary actions that can help, can have healing benefits, or what I say, the ordinary actions can have extraordinary effects on us. And it's how you use that sound. So I have some ways in the book to use sound, but I'll give you some simple ways. I can't remember exactly what I put in the book, but if you want to chill out, you can put on music that beats at fewer beats in your heartbeat. So your heart beats at around, let's say, 60, 70 beats per minute. If you put on some music like Bob Marley or mellow reggae music, your heart, your rhythm's entrained to this external rhythm, and you slow down. So if you want to chill out, just put on Bob Marley. But you were talking about Jonathan Goldman. What I use in my practice and how I actually got into meditation was using these CDs, or they were tapes at the time, that work with binaural beats or frequencies, brain frequencies. So you sit down or you lie down and you put on this music. It's best to use headphones, but you can sit between speakers. You put this music on, and usually you will put a beat of, let's say, 20, a frequency of 20 in your left ear and let's say 12 in your right ear. And your brain entrains at the difference. So it sort of meditates you. So I reckon, what I do in the book is I recommend people spend or get some of these CDs that work with your brain waves. And, 15, 20 minutes can have a lot of beneficial effects, especially for people who have a hard time meditating. These CDs and this sound healing, whatever you want to call it, was my entry point into meditation. But you can also listen to nature sounds that can, everyone knows when they go to the beach, they tend to slow down. When they're walking in traffic, they tend to speed up. So you can use the ocean or bird songs. I mean, things like that to relax.
Yeah. There are, by the way, two people you should know about. One is Michael Tyrell. I did a couple of podcasts with him, and he produces soundtracks and CDs that he composes to specifically target different emotions of peace and love and joy based on the frequencies. They're tuned to frequencies like 444 hertz or 528 hertz. These are all frequencies that elicit positive human emotions, and they're incredibly relaxing. I'll put them on when I get a massage, for example. Just put a massage, you know, have my massage therapist put a table between two giant speakers or bring her the CDs. And those are amazing. And then also, speaking of Sedona, Arizona, there's this guy named Porangi who lives in Sedona, and he is the most amazing, in my opinion, sound healer in the world. You lay on the special sound healing massage table that he has, and he blasts your body with didgeridoo and gong and drum, and it's an amazing sound healing experience. I hadn't heard of this Jonathan Goldman guy you recommend, though. I'll hunt down his, what'd you call it, frequencies is what you call his tracks?
If you just go on Amazon and go to Jonathan Goldman's, he's got about 20 or 30.
Oh, wow.
Frequencies is like a starter one because it gives you an idea of some of the other, like, 7 or 8 different CDs. But they all, you know, they use drums and Buddhist chants and all these different types of sounds. They take you to another place. It's very interesting.
Very cool. Very cool. I like how you weave all this together into the book, to where if you put it all together in this mandala, you're kind of going to be firing on all cylinders from a health standpoint.
Yeah, and the important point is to make people realize it's not that hard. I mean, if you enjoy music, let's start with using music to make you feel better. And once you start feeling better, there's a ripple effect. So then, you know, you may start sleeping better. You may want to go out and exercise. Once this is all happening, then you may say, well, it's time to give up sugar. So that's been my experience. One little change into, you know, from a bad habit into a healthy habit, and this ripple effect starts happening.
Now, you're a fan of self-massage, which, of course, we have to be careful that we define. Some people's idea of self-massage is quite a bit different than others. Walk me through this idea of self-massage and how you do it. You have this whole method that you talk about in the book that I hadn't seen before.
Right. So most people, myself included, when I use self-massage, I'm using a foam roller or tennis balls to get into the knots and release the fascia. But the self-massage is a technique that I learned from Ayurvedic medicine. It's called Abhyanga. Some people have probably had it and didn't realize they can do it themselves. Sometimes when you go to an Ayurvedic spa, they use a sesame oil, warm sesame oil, and they massage it onto you. But I love, you know, I'm all about trying to empower people to do things for themselves. So a lot of people go and get these massages, but if you can do it yourself, it's an act of self-care. It's not expensive. It's deeply relaxing. So that's why we put it in the book. So I just think getting people to get in touch with their bodies, you know, because this type of massage takes a good, you know, 5, 10, 15 minutes. You know, what we recommend is, which is also more from the Ayurvedic tradition, if you want warming, if it's fall or winter, you use something like warm sesame oil. If you want to cool down a bit, you can use coconut oil. But, you know, the techniques in the book, how you use it, I think the scalp and the face and the soles of the feet are the two most important areas. But the abdomen can be an important area. And then, you know, your arms, or you can do a whole body massage, and the techniques of how to do it in the book. But the idea of spending time with yourself, nourishing yourself, can have a lot of beneficial effects. You know, once again, my whole premise is to learn about yourself, to take charge of yourself, to be the author of your own health story. And that's not the way we get taught or the way we see it in the West. We have these authority figures that we listen to. The whole gist of the book is, how do I teach someone to become self-confident, to learn about themselves, and to start using many of the tools and the techniques in the book to optimize their health.
Now, if somebody were to be in New York City and were to come, say, visit you at 1111, your wellness center there, are there any more, I guess, like unique medical protocols that you oversee, you know, that you as a physician would administer to someone that you think are things that that folks should know about or that you would consider to be kind of, you know, outside the box thinking when it comes to medicine?
Yeah, so the whole philosophy here is like individualizing this. So not everyone gets treated the same. You know, we take a good history. I take a good history. I see what's going on, where people's needs are, where they're at, because some people, they're not ready to make significant changes. So, you know, part of the process is to read that person and then decide where you're going to get the most bang for your buck, because some people want to just get started and like stop eating sugar and start feeling good and lose weight quickly. Other people, it's you know, they're not going to do that. So you got to find out and sort of sort out where people are at and come up with a program accordingly. So I'm lucky that I have a team here that helps me. I have a team of health coaches that will help guide and support people with the dietary changes we make, whether it's telling them to incorporate more fats. Most of the time, we're going to tell them to cut out sugar, cut back on a lot of the carbs. Not everyone, obviously, but a lot of people. We support them in terms of where they can get these things, where what they should order when they go eat. But also, I do intravenous vitamins if necessary. You know, now it's become this big thing. You go to the 7-Eleven and you can get an IV drip for a hangover or whatever. We don't do that here. We do very targeted intravenous nutrition therapy if it's needed. Ultimately, we're trying to teach people to take care of themselves. And I also have some other acupuncturists and some body workers who do a chiropractor, people who do active release technique or targeted muscle therapy. So we're often combining acupuncture and targeted muscle release. And the two women who work with me here also are trainers, so they help people with mechanics of how they work. And then I work with outside meditation teachers, physical therapists. So, you know, just from my influence, I think teaching people proper mechanics is really important so they don't go out and hurt themselves, or if they don't release their tight hips when they go out and run, they won't get a sore back or a sore knee, whatever. So we're all about improving function on all levels. In functional medicine, we focus on the digestion and liver, and we really tend to forget about the soft tissue. But the improving functioning of the soft tissue is definitely one of the things we do here in this office. And also trying to meet people where they're at, and if they're not sleeping properly, really making that an important aspect of their healing, or if they're not dealing with the stresses, or if they're on their cell phones too long, or whatever it is. So we try and focus in on what the issues are that people have, and tailor a treatment strategy using all these different modalities to that person's needs.
I like it. So that one's called 1111 Wellness Center. And for you, when you kind of first started to do all of this, apparently you spent a lot of your time training in South Africa, working at clinics in the bush. Did you bring back any of the modalities that you learned from that into your own clinic?
No, not really. I mean, I think that, you know, when I was exposed to that, that was in the early 80s in South Africa, when I first, actually 80, 81, 82, that was my exposure to traditional African healing, the Sangomas. And I didn't understand what they were doing. I didn't believe in what, I didn't really get it. All I realized was there's got to be something to this, because they were helping some of the patients that we couldn't help. And I thought it was a major cultural thing, which I think it is. I mean, I think there's a major aspect, a cultural aspect to any medicine. Same as most people go to their doctor in the West and they believe in the doctor. And even if they get an antibiotic for a viral infection, they get better, not because the antibiotics help them, because they believe in the doctor. And I think the whole cultural aspect, the belief in the practitioner or the healer or the doctor is important. So I think what I really got out of that is the bigger picture of medicine, it's not as cut and dried, but I didn't really understand what they were doing or explore it deeper, except to realize that, huh, this is interesting. There's something here. But I was still early. I mean, this was early in my training. I was still enamored with Western medicine. I was just open enough to realize that there must be something here. But and I was interested in the whole cultural aspect of African culture. So I didn't really get into the medical part. So and I left South Africa in 1984, soon after that. So I didn't really get a chance to dig deeper into African medicine.
Yeah. Well, I find your clinic fascinating. 1111. And this is also a great book. It's called How to Be Well. How to Be Well. So I'd recommend that if you want a really good read, really comprehensive read, tons of ideas from bone broth to cacao to ways to eat vegetables, a lot more. It's a fun read. It's a great book. Anybody can wrap their heads around this one. It's not like incredibly dense scientific information that's going to make your head hurt. Instead, it's just like a fun read for learning how to be well. And I think it's a great book. So congratulations on publishing this one, Frank. And also, thanks so much for coming on the show and sharing this stuff with us.
And thanks for having me, Ben. It's been an absolute pleasure to talk to you, as it was when I first met you. You always come up with some interesting stuff. So let's keep it going. And congrats on all and great. With all the work you do, I love it. Thank you.
Well, then next time, and it should be soon, pay attention to the calendar if you're listening in for the next time I'll be in New York City speaking at one of Dr. Boulet's events over there. But I'll definitely ping you next time I'm over there in New York, Frank.
Fantastic.
Well, folks, until next time, I'm Ben Greenfield along with Dr. Frank Lipman from 1111 Wellness Center in New York City. All the show notes along with his book will be over at bengreenfieldfitness.com/Lipman. Thanks for listening in and have an amazing day.
You've been listening to the Ben Greenfield Fitness Podcast. Go to BenGreenfieldFitness.com for even more cutting-edge fitness and performance advice.